Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivkacharya Stodhira Sasvaya Ngris Isi Bhaktivinanda Swami Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Iskan Fongacharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Namacharya Srila Haidas Thakur Ki Vrimsi Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Deita Gadada Sri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktivinanda Ki. All glories to the assembly devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Glories to Shishi Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 60, Text 22 to 26. Iti trilokesha patestadatmana. Iti trilokesha patestadatmana. Priyasya devasuta purvam apriyam. Asutya bhita ridi jata vipatus. Chintam durantam rudati jagamaha. Iti trilokesha patestadatmana. Priyasya devasuta purvam apriyam. Asrutya bhita ridi jata vipatus. Chintam durantam rudati jagamaha. Priyasya devasuta purvam apriyam. Sukavita vidyata vipatas. Sintam rudantam rudati jagamaha. Iti trilokesha patestadatmana. Priyasya devasuta purvam apriyam. Asutya bhita ridi jata vipatus. Chintam Iti, thus, three loka of the three worlds, Isha of the lords, Pate of the master, Tada then, Atmana of our own, Priyasya beloved, Devi goddess Rukmini. Ashruta, never heard. Purvam, previously. Apriyam, unpleasantness. There's apriyam. There's another word called aprita also. They said that the word Africa came from the word aprita. Ashrutya, hearing. Bhita, frightened. Riddhi, in her heart. Jata, born. Duranta, terrible. Rudati Sabin Jaga Jagama Ha She Experienced. Translation: Goddess Rukmini had never before heard such unpleasantries from her beloved, the Lord of Universal Rulers, and she became frightened. A tremor arose in her heart, and in terrible anxiety, she began to cry. Text 23. I guess we could do it together. Pada sujatane na karuna shriya uvam likanta shubhya janasitam asinchati kunkumaru shitao shanta prastavato nukarudava. Translation: With her tender foot, effulgent with the reddish glow of her nails, she scratched the ground, and tears darkened by her eye makeup sprinkled her kunkuma reddened breast. There she stood, face downward, her voice choked up by extreme sorrow. 24. Tasya suduka bayasoka vinasa budir astach chokadaya pata dehascha viklavadiya sahasamukya rambe vahayu vito pavikirikisha. Translation: Rukmini's mind was overwhelmed with unhappiness, fear and grief. Her bangles slipped from her hand and her fan fell to the ground. In her bewilderment, she suddenly fainted. Her hair scattering all about as her body fell to the ground, like a planting tree blown over by the wind. Purport: Shocked by Lord Krishna's words, Rukmini could not understand that the Lord was only teasing, and thus she displayed these ecstatic symptoms of grief, which Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti characterizes as sattvika ecstasies, ranging from becoming stunned to dissolution. Text 25. Tadrishva Bhagavan Priyaya Prima Bandhanam Asya Padhim Ajanatya Karunaso Kampata. Translation: Seeing that his beloved was so bound to him in love that she could not understand the full meaning of his teasing, merciful Lord Krishna felt compassion for her. 26. Paryankaravaru yasya tam utapya chaturbhuja eshan samuya tatvaktram pramarja padmapanina. Translation: The Lord quickly got down from the bed, manifesting forearms. He picked her up, gathered her hair, and caressed her face with his lotus hand. Purport: The Lord manifested forearms so he could do all of these things simultaneously. Om Agyana Tirmanasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Sakshuntam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Namaha. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shumiti Satsuru Padasura Samana Namini Satsuru Pabidam Vande Venitam Shadu Bhushanam Bhakti Grantana Naipanyam Bhakti Vyanta Sikshitam. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shumiti Bhakti Vyanta Samani Kambi Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracham Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Prashchata Adishacham Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Chabunikinda Shri Chagradar Shivasadi Gaurabhakti. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Paramayam Dadati Swaparantika. I'll now alas, that God has spawned from the quest for the elixir of immortality, that most exquisite, radiant, and unmatchable beauty, who captivated both the gods and the demons, that giver of good fortune to all, is now contemplating her own seemingly misfortune. Will she be rejected by that self-satisfied Lord, or will she be left in isolation by him? These and innumerable questions pondered her bewildered mind. With tear-deluged eyes, choked voice, she fell to the ground like a plantain tree blown by the wind. If we were placed in a lesser test, then our best solace is to remember that glorious prayer by the munificent Lord Chaitanya. O Lord, whether you handle me roughly by your embrace or make me brokenhearted by not being present before me, I'm still your unconditional servant, port after port. Queen Rukmini's mood was the same. I can probably go through that in Bengali. Ashlishyava pararatam pinastu mam adarshanam marma hatam karotuva yatatatava vidat hato lampato matprana natastusa eva napara. So you know, I know no one but Krishna as my Lord, and he shall remain so if he handles me roughly by his embrace or makes me brokenhearted by not being present before me. He is completely free to do anything and everything, for he is always my worshipful Lord unconditionally. So that little poem, I guess I'm catching from my master. He's the master poet. So Rukmini Devi is no other than Lakshmi Devi. And as we know, if you remember the story of the churning of the milk ocean, she arose when they were churning for the nectar of immortality. Elixir is like another word for nectar, or the mystic potent. And so she came from that. She was both the demons and the demigods, they were allured by her beauty. See, she gives good fortune to all, and now she's contemplating her fortune with that self-satisfied Lord Krishna. Would he reject her or accept her or what? She was so bewildered. So in this second purport, is it? Yes. The purport to 24. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Rukmini fell in the Sattvika Bhava mood. And the Sattvika Bhava mood is that she has a pure emotion for the Lord. It's stated that this mood has 8 transformations. The first one is Stamba, or stunned. So she was stunned. The second is Sveda. Perspiration, she was perspiring. Romancha, horripilation, or shock. She was shocked to hear what Krishna was saying. Swarabheda, faltering of voice, her voice was choking. Vipatu, trembling, she was trembling. Vaivarnya, transformation of bodily color, her color changed. Ashru, shedding of tears. And then Pelaya, fainting, she fainted and fell to the ground. So she exhibited all these eight sattvika transformation. And within the Jiva Dharma, chapter 27, this is explained, and it even gives more explicit explanation how this takes place. He says within the body, the prana air, when it comes in contact with the earthly animal element, then inertness or stillness takes place. Says when it comes with the watery element, then tears comes about, ashu. When it comes into the fiery element, there's color change, vaivarna, and also there's perspiration, sweta. States when you come to the airy element, there's horripilation or stunning. There's trembling, vipati, and choking of the voice, swara bheda. And when you come to the ethereal or the etta element, there is fainting, palaya. See? So this is the deep explanation of how this takes place. And so Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he's rightly stated that this is the sattvika bhava, this is the transformation that takes place in Rukmini's character. So we find here, let me get to a more simpler topic. We find here that Rukmini was completely stunned. And then she fainted. And then the Lord manifested his four arms, the Narayana form. Narayana form. The Narayana form, it's stated that in Vraja, the Lord is in his original Krishna form with Srimati Radharani and the gopis. And that's a different bhava, a different mood. But when he is in Dwarka, he manifests his Narayana form, or he manifests his Narayana mood. And he relates to Rukmini and the queen in this Narayana mood or bhava. You see? So it's stated, Srila Prabhupada states in the Krishna book that this is befitting for him to take this four-handed form, because he's relating to Rukmini as Lakshmi Narayan. And so it is befitting. Also, Rukmini was really dumbfounded by his words. Why is he speaking like this? See? This is not befitting her husband, the one he knew. But the previous verse, and this is a little understated, the previous verse, text 21, Sukadeva Goswami said, Rukmini had taught herself especially beloved by the Lord, because he never left her company. By saying these things to her, he vanquished her pride, and then he stopped speaking. So maybe that was also one reason that he wanted, and so in a way he was trying to clip her pride a little bit. See? And so he spoke like this. But also we'll hear later on that he was jesting also to see her a little angry, to get her a little bit agitated. He wants to see her face, her agitated face and so forth. So he decided to do this. But coming to reality now, Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna was asking for a divorce. You know, he was asking for a divorce, and If they were going to truly allow Florida, that means Rukmini would have got half of the universe, right? Anyhow, this is strange to Rukmini, because according to the Vedas or the Vedic laws, there is no divorce. Can anyone say why? Anybody say why there's no divorce? Janamashmi, you have any clue? In the Vedic system.
There's the family culture is destroyed by that. And then this is described in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. I can't think of the verses.
Adharma Bhiyava Krishna Pradushanti.
Yeah, so then the women become degraded. Mm-hmm. And then with the degradation of womanhood come unwanted progeny. That's no argument that's given there. But in general, you know, that it sets the foundation for Sanatan Dharma, you know, a proper family situation where the women are protected and the children are protected, and then they can take to Krishna consciousness.
Very, very good. Very good attempt. Yeah, of course. And in the Manusmriti, it's also stated, not by sale nor divorce is a woman released from her husband. See? So in the Vedic laws, it was quite stringent. But also it stated that she has to be protected at all stages of her life, from childhood by her father, adulthood by her husband, and old age by her son or grown-up son or by the society. Because in this way, then she's always protected. And it's because she brings forth the progeny of the world. And within the Varnashram culture also, if you have intermixture of caste and so forth, then you get what you call a watered-down society. You get Varna Sankara, right? Yeah, Varna Sankara, unwanted progeny. Or when there is unwanted progeny, all type of religious activities are neglected and so. So this was within the Vedic system, the culture. And so so Srila Prabhupada also within the Krishna book says that what Krishna was saying, he was simply joking, because there is no base for this divorce. And so this topic is the least discussed within our society, yet the most impacted onto us. In other words, our divorce rate is maybe even higher than the rate within this country. And within this country, it's about the highest in the world. But yet, within our society, it's even higher than that. So I'd like to discuss it maybe in a little more depth. And maybe, you know, like to get the input of all you knowledgeable devotees, why this is so. See? Can anyone say maybe why this is so prevalent in our society? Yes, Janamashmi. I mean, it's a touchy subject, but since we are on it already, we might discuss it really, and the Mataji has an equal input also. Yes, Janamashmi.
Well, one issue is that, you know, I having been married for 25 years, there's an absence of the extended family, which gives tremendous support. So that's the way it's supposed to go in Vedic culture, but we're kind of forced by circumstances into the nuclear family situation, because most of us were converts. So everything falls on, you know, with the extended family, there's extended responsibility for finances and for raising the children, and for also for educating them. You know, it's spread over more people, so there's a lot more stress factors that come into play, with at least in this first generation, even the second generation of devotees. You know, the extended family hasn't been fully established yet. The output Prabhupada had in mind for the traditional Gurukul system was the self-sufficient farm communities, and that hasn't manifested yet. And that gives so much stability to family life if the simple living were actually enacted. So sometimes both husband and wife, they have to work, and there's all the stress that comes from that, and it makes it very difficult to have a peaceful relationship.
Very good. Very good. Especially with the input of the extended family, the mother, the grandmother, father, grandfather, and so forth. They have a great... For example, if there's discontent in the home or there's some petty quarrel, it's not right away you jump into the law system or the court. What happens... Sometimes the girl goes back to her mom, and she cools down a little. And the boy is supported by his family too, and they stay and discuss it over and see where they flaw. Because that is always. They say that once the tongue is in the mouth, the teeth will clip it sometimes. So teeth and tongue comes, you know. So disagreement comes about, but it's... You know, the system now within this culture, our culture, which is not so much Vedic-oriented, then it has another concept. Of course, within the biblical teaching is stated that if one party is found in fornication, then you give a written divorce, you know, like that. But of course, that's an extreme case. But now we find that in society we rushed into that. You know, we rushed into that within even realizing the implications. And then the repercussions is so detrimental that it affects not only the party, but also when there's children. So in the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada also stated that Rukmini had big children already. She had Pradyumna. She probably had 10 kids, you see? And so that's not possible. When a woman has children, there's no way of divorcing in the Vedic system, you see? And so they're helped by the extended family. But like you rightly say, in ISKCON really, because that is greatly absent, then there is not so much help. And so the outer society input is so powerful and greater that it affects, you know, our culture so much, tremendously. And so we find that there's separation for the most trivial things, you see? And so that should not be, you see? And also, of course, I mean, we cannot understate this, and I'm not trying to... pull a nerve on the woman's side, but also the concept of womanhood, as Srila Prabhupada wrote in the Bhagavad Gita, is somewhat misguided to some extent. You know, there is an inflated role that's been portrayed within the modern society, and that to some extent has an impact. But we within the Vedic society, we know, we understand, you know, I mean, really all of us are servant of the Supreme. And of course, the husband, to, the wife has to some extent a subservient role to the husband. You see, and I would like to hear what the Matajis have to say on that. Especially maybe, what's her name again? Mati, yeah. Coming from the Vedic conception, you know. These things, I mean, they should be, we should speak about them sometimes so that our new generation hear about it. It's a very fundamental topic within our society. And I guess we could eliminate so much of the disruptions in the families today, you know. So, Mother Madhumati, you want to say something? Well, but I'd like to hear her input. Can someone give her the mic? Mm-hmm. You're one of the foremost chaste lady within our society, and have a good. Okay, let me continue maybe a little bit. What about the Matajis at the back? Let me hear something from one of the Matajis.
If she needs the permission of her husband to speak.
That's why I'm not here, so I just have to. Oh no. Yeah. So one of the Matajis that are back there, would they like to give him some input a little bit? Okay, that Mataji here. Somebody could give her Madam Mohan. Yeah. Please.
I appreciate very much what Janmashtami Prabhu mentioned, unique to our society, the lack of an extended family and all the support that comes from that. I recall when I was particularly looking through Prabhupada's books on the topic of women in Krishna consciousness, I wanted to conclude what is the meaning of chastity. And through those readings, I came up with a formula that chastity equals tolerance plus shyness. Because he cited examples of tolerance in the case of his sister, Pishima, and with her husband, even he was somewhat of a debauchee. She would never deride him in public, or she would tolerant and patient, and he came around in the end to a higher standard of, you know,
right,
life. And shyness, Prabhupada said that this shyness is a safety valve. And he cited the example of that cleaning woman who, when she was doing her cleaning duties, I can't recall the exact detail, but there were some men in the area where she was going to be cleaning, and she just, she did not tell them, you know, get out of the way here, I'm trying to do my job. She was shy. In her shyness, they saw and respected her need to clean that area, so they moved aside without any words spoken even. But also this shyness has broken down so much due to the media and It's a very delicate topic.
Sensitive.
Very sensitive, because our children are, you know, our first generation. They all grew up together, and then as they're becoming adults, and there's just a lot of intermingling. So this has not been a prominent characteristic, you know, in the dealings between the new generations, or even in the original, you know.
Yeah.
Because of, Kali Yuga.
Thank you.
Breaking down of shyness.
Thank you so much. The other Maharaji wants to say something? Or we have Marumati, and then Sri Devi wants to say something? Okay.
One thing is that I think that there's a lot of misconceptions about different words. And each one of us are individuals, so we hear the words submissive, chastity, shyness. We all have different conceptions in our mind what that means. And I think it's important to understand what those words mean and how they apply in different situations differently. I think it's important that we understand, one way to understand what these words mean is to see how different ladies acted in from our Shastra, how they acted. Because we, you know, some women are fiery. Some women are more quiet kind of person. And if somebody is fiery, it doesn't mean that they're not shy. I mean, you look at Mother Draupadi, she is the most fiery person. And if you read the Mahabharata, you see how she acted in different times, in different ways, how the kind of responsibilities she took, how she managed different things. It describes that she managed Yudhishthira Maharaj's treasury, and she was responsible for so many people, and they didn't even know. They didn't know of all the servants. She knew all the names of each and every servant. She was taking charge. You see, Draupadi would, many times she would become fiery about, you know, sometimes how Yudhishthira Maharaj acted, and yet she was a very chaste lady. So sometimes I find there are certain misconceptions about what it means to be a shy woman or a chaste woman. Even Mother Sita, who is not, you know, Draupadi was a very fiery woman, but Mother Sita wasn't in that sense. But you also see her in her relationship with Lord Ram. Lord Ram was everything, and you see that how when Lord Ram wanted to go to the forest and he didn't want to take her. You read in the Ramayana, you know, what she tells Lord Ram. Why, are you a woman just dressed up like a man or something? You know, I mean, you hear those personalities. So I guess
very good.
I think it's important we understand what
it is. Very, very good. And very good you quote those to Sita, Draupadi. Draupadi was very fiery. She was also born from fire. But, you know, she's considered a Kshatriya woman, you know, so she didn't. And then, of course, Sita. And I would like to cite a few others, too. There is Kunti, there is Satyavati, and there is Amba. We'd like to touch upon that. Oh, did Maharaji? Did you want to say something, Maharaji?
Yeah, as the famous exchange where they were in a darshan and somebody asked Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, what does humility mean?" You know, whenever we think of humility, we think shy, meek, quiet, like that. And Prabhupada shocked everybody. He said, to be humble means to act boldly for Krishna.
Very good.
And then you think, wow, how does that, you know? But the way I kind of related it is that, for example, on Sankirtan, we might not want to go on Sankirtan. We might be in the modes or on the mental platform that day. But you have to push yourself to act boldly for Krishna. You know, if you're doing any type of service, you can apply that to any seva, that you might not feel like doing it or be in the mood, but if you have to push yourself and act boldly for Krishna. You know?
Very good, very good.
That's real humility, according to Prabhupada.
And also, chastity is learned. The young girls, boys, they learn from their parents, from the Vedic scriptures. Especially the young girl, she learned how to give herself freely to young boys and so forth. This was very fundamental in the Vedic society. And I would cite some cases. There were the case of Kunti. When Kunti got the boon from Durvasa Muni to get any, to call upon any demigod, she curiously but innocently, she was maybe just 11, she just touching puberty, and she called upon Surya. And when Surya came, she was very frightened, you know. But Surya says, if I leave without something happening, I would be a laughing stock to the demigods. So I have to give you a son. But she says, I've never married. I'm a young girl. I cannot do that, you see. And then Surya promised, well, she says, the only way is that possible is for you to reinstate my virginity if anything were to take place. And then that happened. Because had Kunti been without, being not a virgin, then she would not be able to marry to Pandu. Then there was the other case of Satyavati. When Satyavati met Paraharsa, Parashara Muni, in the lake, he said, I'm captivated by your beauty and so forth. You know, I want to give you a child. She said, but that's not possible, you know, because I'm a virgin girl. How that's possible? And then he says, don't worry about that. You would still remain a virgin. So Vyasadeva was born, and then, as we know, he grew up and so on, and she remained a virgin. And then that's how she married Bhishma, you see. And there's the other case, the real case in Vedic literature that comes out a lot, and that's with Amba. When Amba was taken by Bhishma, she told Bhishma that I gave my heart to Salva, and so I cannot give my heart to someone else, you know. And so she said, I want to go back to Samba. Salva. And so Bhishma says, okay, you could do that, you could go. But when she went back to Salva says, which man would take a woman that been touched by another man, you see? And so he refused her. And so she went to different sages and Parshuram, and then Parshuram forced Bhishma. He says, you have to marry her because it's you that has kidnapped her. You have to marry her. And then Bhishma says also, I've written it somewhere. Oh, Bhishma says here, no wise man will take into his house a woman who has given her heart to another any more than he would admit a poisonous snake in his home. You see? So just imagine, that was what Bhishma says. Bhishma says, I will not take her, I would fight with you rather. See? So this concept is very, very important to our society, but to the world too. But because this is absent, especially within the Western society, it's underrated and understated, then there is no care for that concept also. But that creates a great amount of chastity also. You know, I mean, it's... And so we find in the Arab society and the, especially the Hindu society, maybe in the Vedic society also, the Buddhist society, this is important, fundamental. But even especially within the Arab society, it's very fundamental. And so it's, as parents, we need to speak to our children also to understand this concept. You see? So, I mean, it's difficult to discuss, but it's important. Both for the boy and the girl. I mean, you discuss with your boy kids, you're not to go and fool along with girls and like that, you know. I mean, it's important you get married and so forth. And the girl also, that's important. And that's the foundation for chastity. See, starts like that. So I would stop here if there's any question now or comment. Okay, yes, Mataji.
Well, I was gonna. One observation that I've made is that there is the aspect of Western culture is sort of more degraded than, you know, maybe like traditional Hindu culture. So there's that one aspect. And there's more sense gratification and there's less honoring of traditions and chastity. So that's one thing. But another thing that strikes me is that there seems to be, you know, within spiritual societies, a double narrative of, on one hand, you know, we talk about Vedic culture, which is like family-based, and women being protected and children, the importance of, you know, children and family. But on the other hand, there's this other narrative that says, you know, I'm not attached, wife, home, family, you know, it's all like meaningless to me. If I'm really spiritually advanced, I don't go for that. So to me, there's this like double narrative that perhaps causes some, you know, issues within people's minds. Well, if I'm really advanced, then I'm not really interested in family life. So, and then the other narrative is, you know, Vedic culture is very family-oriented. So
very good
it's point. A kind of like cognitive dissonance within our movement.
Very, very good point. And I like to throw some light into that. Within the Vedic system, you have the four varnas and the ashram. In the ashram, usually one goes to Brahmacharya, then Grihastha, then Vanaprastha, and then he becomes renounce of family life. But once he's engaged in family life, then he has to take full responsibility and go through the phase until he become over maybe 50, jumping on 60 and so on, then gradually move to the renunciation, if he chooses to. There's some outstanding devotee students like Bhaktisiddhanta who is like specially endowed that he does not care about family life and he just become Naishtik Brahmachari. You see, that's a different thing. Within our society this happened to some degree also because Srila Prabhupada, the need was there for preachers and for renunciant. And so Srila Prabhupada tried to recruit as much devotees, but knowing fully well that some may fall and so many things may happen also. Srila Prabhupada knew about those things. And so, but he still encouraged renunciation for the sake of preaching. You see, and so we got all these different mishaps and so forth. Really. But in the ideal Vedic society, and you know, there's still talk about implementing Varnashram to some degree or Daivi Varnashram or whatever. But this is fundamental. And the point you made about some men showing this disinclination to follow strictly the family vows and become detached and so forth. I mean, that's there too. But they might, you know, there are some devotees that are exceptional and they may be able to go through that phase, but generally most of them have to go through the life gradually and follow the principles of Grihastha. Yeah, Madam Mohan Prabhu.
Mm-hmm. One thing I've always thought that would be nice to do is when our young people get married, and that's in regards to what Janmashtami Prabhu was saying, which is, I think, an extremely important point. But if we could, when our young people get married, at the time of marriage, that we have an older couple that they both parties feel good, and during the marriage that they take the responsibility of taking care of the young couple, because I think it's a very common thing when a young couple is going through difficulties, they don't know where to turn and they feel embarrassed or whatever. But if it's established or something like that, that they choose somebody that they feel comfortable at the marriage time, they take the responsibility.
Definitely. I think that needs to be discussed more. And, you know, all the devotees always try to counsel the young ones, you know, and if they're getting some kind of a problem, talk to them. They could have a little time out, a little cooling down, but not separation, just quick separation and jump with somebody else, you know. Yeah. Madam Mohan Prabhu?
When I thought about it, I came up with, there's many reasons, and just five popped into my mind. Previously, there was the mode of goodness was prevalent. When you talk about Vedic culture, it was established in the mode of duty and goodness, and now it's in the mode of passion. So that does a lot. And previously, there was also compatibility charts, like astrologically, where people were just like, one of the verses I did yesterday was that it's between similar people.
Compatible. Yeah.
Compatible. And then, of course, that has to also do with their interest in spiritual life. So an interest in spiritual life, if they're not progressing at the same rate, then there's some, it's going to cause some difficulties there. And then also there's, we don't have a way to get to know each other so much. You know, it previously was arranged, but it was arranged with a lot of thought. Nowadays, they put people together with just, a lot of times the brahmachari desire to get married wasn't always for the whole package. He had one thing in mind. And that's not a stable element for a marriage. And it was just the way it was. Well, okay, if you can't be a brahmachari, get married. Who's there to marry? Oh, there's someone. You know, I mean, it wasn't really, it was a very young and immature way to do a lot of things like that.
Very
was wrong. Yes, and there was no matching, no astrology. There's so many just immaturity, not understanding what they were going to need to go through.
All right. So very good. And sorry we didn't have your input, Mataji, but some other time, you know. I hope we are not too biased to the ladies, all right? Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.